The world was built to favor men.
In this part of the world, women are taught to be ready, not bold.
There's so many issues that are already against the women to even start with.
But Ife Durosimieti chose bold. Before her company raised $600,000 in 24 hours, she's been building quietly, building community, trust, and credibility.
I think there are only about 4% of women who have actually raised over $1 million.
Because if it's perfect from day one, you're already too late. In this episode, she tells the story of posting a crowdfunding ask on Instagram.
Okay, the minimum we'll take is 20K. When I was going to put in that 20K, I was so scared. I was like, I don't know anybody who would just give me $20,000 like that.
Scared. Setting a $20,000 minimum investment and watching people show up.
When people filled out the Excel sheets and said how much they could put in, by the time we did everything, I got commitment of over $5 million.
What she needed was $600,000. What she got was over $5 million in commitment.
I raised the $600,000 in 24 hours in 2021.
From just one Instagram post. We talk about why women receive less funding, why many never apply, and why solving a real problem at scale changes everything.
I saw a video yesterday of the founder of Beyond Simi. She had signed agreements with a couple of funders or investors, and the minute they heard she was pregnant, four investors pulled out.
This is the Frankly Business Podcast, where courage meets capital.
How do you apply for grants? What is that golden pen advice that you
I really...
I love it anytime I stay around women. Because they're amazing creatures. I have an amazing woman. She's done a lot in the Nigerian business landscape, especially as regards finance. And I'm just going to go straight into the point. You already know her. Her economy. Walk us through your journey. It's very important for us to understand how you've been able to shape the person you've become. What shaped the person you've become, your journey and all that. And I love the fact that I have a co-host who's also a woman, Precious Enyi, amazing, amazing woman. So like I told you, remember the first episode, I said, you're going to be seeing different changes on the Frankly Business Podcast. Ife Durosimieti, you're very much welcome.
Thank you very much.
Let us understand your journey. Can you walk us through your journey?
Okay. Thank you very much for that introduction. My journey is very funny because I never thought that I would get into finance, especially because my background is not finance, yeah. Right? My background is more marketing and communication. So the way we started out, I started a business called Parliamo Bambini. It was a baby furniture company. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we won a couple of grants from Tenuel Foundation, Variant Advisory, different companies that believed in us, right? And a lot of people at the time started asking me, oh, Ife, how did you hear about this opportunity? How did you hear about this grant, this fellowship? And naturally, I like to help. Yeah. So at first, I started, you know, telling people one by one, but it became, you know, a big deal. Like a lot of people just started disturbing me and all that. So I said, you know what? Let me do a video that would, you know, pretty much just break everything down for people. And I did the video. I called the videographer, actually. I started shooting and she was like, Ife, I think this thing should actually be a book, not a video. And I was like, please, I beg. And she was like, I'm not doing this shoot. Like, this has to be a book. So I was like, okay, no problem. Let me go back. Let me just write in a small ebook and then just call it a day. Wrote the ebook. I was about to launch it. And then another friend said, no, it should actually be an actual book. Anyway, long story short, I did the book. The book was a huge success. We sold thousands and thousands of copies. The title of the book was called Accessing Grants for Startups. So in the book, we pretty much broke down the different opportunities that were available for entrepreneurs across Africa. And in that book, we also interviewed a couple of entrepreneurs that had also tapped into different funding opportunities. Okay. And also fellowships. And from that, a lot of people got access to the book and they started asking me, how do they hear about future opportunities? Because we had a list of opportunities that were available, like I said. They said, how do we get information about future opportunities? So I decided to then do a community. So in the community, we'll just share opportunities, whether it's grants, whether it's a loan opportunity, whether it's a job. And then we started doing capacity building workshops. This community grew from 0 to 1,500 pretty much in a year. And in fact, it was paid. I think they're paying 5,000 naira monthly. So a lot of people, you know, just were just interested. First it was free, then after I started, I had to now hire people, and then, you know, eventually my friend advised me to make it a paid community. Long story short, after speaking and interacting with these 1,500 women, because we started having monthly meetups and all that, delving into some of the issues that they were facing was access to finance. And this was clear data. Like, we interacted with each other. We were in similar demographics. Mm. It was just clear what they needed. So money. We started thinking money. It was like Eagle. Money was, it was at the top of the list. Access to finance, access to opportunities. A lot of them had, you know, taken space, you know, to have their children, take care of their families. Some of them wanted to go back into the job market. Mm. It was just, you know, typical issues that we knew that each other had, but we just didn't know how to solve it. But because of access to the community, things started getting easier. We started getting job opportunities from within the community, and it just became clearer. So at some point, we did a savings challenge, and some of us joined that savings challenge, and together we saved, I think, almost $100,000. And I was like, you know. And before that, a lot of them used to complain that they didn't have any savings, they didn't have any investments. So we did the savings challenge twice, and at this point, we had actually built our own community app called AGS Tribe, which was the acronym of the book. Oh. So we built that. And then I said, you know what, let me plug in an API into this community app so that people could save directly on the app, because at the time we were using another platform, and they started asking that they wanted to actually save on our app. But when I approached the app that we were using at the time, they didn't have an API to give us. So I said, you know what, let me go back to the drawing board and then build our own app where people could actually save. And that's how this whole thing came about. We then did like a fundraising round. Members of the community actually also invested. And that's how we transitioned from AGS Tribe to Herconomy. So that's what got me here. It wasn't a planned thing. It wasn't something that I saw, you know, in the future. It was just very, very organic, you know, community-led type style or style. And yeah, it's just been, you know, a fantastic journey since then. We hired from the community when we first started. Some people even volunteered. And yeah, we've just grown to what we are today, which is a fintech organization called Herconomy that has impacted the lives of so many, you know, people, especially women across the country.
I must confess that I'm enjoying, I can listen to you talk all day. I'm enjoying watching you talk. And
thank you.
And anyone who listens to you would want to say that, wow, so I can start like this and grow like this. But there must be challenges. There must have been hiccups along the line. So let's talk about them. What were those breaking moments that you thought that, who even sent me go this thing now? Why did I even enter this business? I'm sure there would have been those. Did you also have discouragement from the women? Because sometimes we can be a handful, trust me. So how did you cope with them?
I've had it like almost every 6 months. I'll just be like, I beg, this is bigger than me. Who sends me? Especially the finance part, right? Mm. The tech part too, because I'm not a tech person, you know.
You're not?
I'm not a tech person. So I didn't read computer science. I can do tech too. Anybody can get into tech.
Awesome.
You have to have the right team. You have to learn to even trust people. And you have to know that, you know, whether or not you make mistakes, you know, whether you make a mistake or not, just continue. You know, you continue iterating, right? The first app we built, in fact, it didn't launch. On the day of launch, it just scattered. Hey, it didn't come on.
Now, this kind of story we like to hear. Some people will not think that it's all rosy from the beginning.
No, it's not rosy. Like the first day, the first app we built, we had done 3 days to go, 4 days to go. You know, we were excited. On the day of the launch, it didn't come on.
It freezes.
it didn't work. So that happened. The second one we built, you know, some things on the app were not working. You know, it's always very, very difficult. But thankfully, you know, our members, our users, you know, they kept on staying. They kept on telling us, okay, this is what we should do. We started getting feedback from the users and all that. So it never, ever, ever is perfect. And you read a lot of quotes and, you know, all the time, like, if it's perfect on day one, you've not done your job. That means you're too late, you know. So you have to just continue building, continue.
You get so what kept you pushing? I mean, with these challenges, why did you not just drop off and say, okay, you know what, I've had enough. Let me go back to who I used to be.
What?
Apart from that, I even also want to know how, can we double down on that problem? Because it's finance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And with finance, it's a very fragile industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're dealing with one of the things that drives the emotions of people the most.
Money. And causes a lot of problems.
Yes, money. I think they say two things. Money. Love, three things, money, love, fear, or something. Mm-hmm. It drives a lot of emotion in the lives of people. And you had technical glitch on the first day. Mm-hmm. Did that not create a lot of pushback. How were you able to manage all of that?
So I remember the first time that the app did launch, and I was just like, oops, like I was so confused. I didn't know what to do. And it was also on my birthday. So everybody was really looking forward to it. But a friend of mine said, Ife, nothing spoiled. Let's go on WhatsApp. And I was like, yeah, in fact, it's actually her sister's wedding tomorrow. And she was like, Ife, let's go on WhatsApp. And I was like, so you guys will join a community on WhatsApp. She was like, yeah, at least we've been waiting for something. So we must enter somewhere today. So I was like, okay, let's do it. Let's go on WhatsApp. So we just looked for an alternative. And then we're on WhatsApp. Eventually, WhatsApp was too small for us. Then we moved to Telegram, right? So we just looked for something to do in the meantime. And that was a community app at the time. It wasn't the finance app.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't the finance app. So when you're thinking about finance, right, it's been difficult. And the truth is, we stayed safe. And that's why we, at the beginning, for like the first 3 years, we only stayed with savings. With savings, it's difficult to... The issues are your spread is very thin, but you get more money when you start doing lending and your money actually comes back.
So wait, let's talk about the savings, because I mean, it must be difficult for some people listening to understand exactly what you mean. You said it was like cumulative saving, like all the women were saving together.
Yes.
So how were you able to, you know, spread the saves? Were they just putting all the money together in one particular source?
Yes. So we have a savings app. In the app, everybody has their own like specified account number where they can deposit money into.
Okay.
Or we can do like direct debit. So why ours makes it easier for you is the debits are automated. So you can say you want to do 500 naira daily. You can say you want to do it weekly. You
so
can
they
say
just debit my account daily.
Direct debit. Oh, in the middle of the night, the money just goes. So you don't even feel it.
And but then it goes into my account with us, with the platform.
Yeah, so you can monitor it. You can check out how much you have saved. And it's high yield savings.
And for someone like us that don't save, that's interesting. It's, go further.
Yeah, it's high yield savings. So you earn 20% interest on savings.
Eh?
So, yes. And a lot of people have used this to pay their rent, buy houses, all kinds of things, because when you first start, it's small. Let's say you're doing 500 naira. But imagine when you start doing 10,000 naira a day. Imagine when you start doing, some people, 100,000 naira a day. The interest on that monthly, sometimes that is the interest for my monthly shopping, right? And that, my capital is not eroded.
So what's the most interest you pay?
20%. So treasury bills.
Monthly?
No, per annum. It's 20%. That's MMM. The 20% per annum.
I was worried.
Yeah, 20% per annum. And it keeps you disciplined because you can't just withdraw anytime. If you withdraw, you have free withdrawal days in a year, just to encourage you to save more. And then if you want to withdraw outside of those free withdrawal days, then you are penalized. So that means that more than likely you keep the money there, except you have like a serious, serious emergency, right? So yeah, the direct, bless you. So the direct debit just works, and it's easier as opposed to saying, oh, every month I'm going to save 300,000. At the end of that month, one basis will just come.
So how are you able to pay the interest?
So we work with a lot of credible asset management companies.
That's a thing too. Yes. So people understand the transparency.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's very transparent. Work with credible asset management companies that are regulated by SEC. And we only do very like moderate risk. We don't take any high risk. So your money is guaranteed.
I was going to say that because I know that anything that's got to do with such investments, risk is very important. Yes. But risk management is key.
Yes, yes.
Very critical.
Yeah, so your money is guaranteed. You know, every year we've paid out millions and millions. So I think the first year, maybe we paid out 5 million in interest. But now, as at last year, we did over 120 something million as interest.
Interest. While their capital still stands.
Yes, of course.
And how about if I want my capital back?
Yeah, you can take your capital. It's your account. So you can withdraw it anytime. You know, we have different products. We have Vault, which is the fixed deposit one, where you earn 20%. We have Float, which is the everyday savings one. And you can withdraw anytime from that one, but you earn only 2.5 interest on that one. And you also can pay your bills from there. So like data, airtime, electricity bills, and you even get cash back when you make those payments.
What have you been doing with housewives with this? Because I can imagine housewives knowing that every one that they get from Oga, they can be saving it. This is awesome.
Yes, yes. It's actually a fantastic product, and I wish everybody knew about it. Because
so how do we know about this? Thank God we know you now. Thank God I know you now. So it's interesting.
Yes, it is.
So
it is. Thank you.
You were able to raise $600,000 through crowdfunding on Instagram. That's a crazy feat. And if you look at what that means, it means you're putting your credibility on the line and you're dealing with people, with the entire public. How did you do that? What gave you that audacity to go down that route? How did people trust you?
Okay.
So I think it's good for us to go back in time to mm-hmm. really understand how you were able to build this framework.
Okay.
That people trusted you with money, because this is money. Mm-hmm. And it's more or less like giving us the corporate idea of, it's more or less like the corporate idea of Ajo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if mm-hmm. you get my point. Mm-hmm. So how were you able to earn that trust?
Okay. So I raised the $600,000 in 24 hours in 2021. Mm. And before then, like I said, we had been building community. We had been giving out grants to women. We had a lot of impact already. People already knew what we were doing. Mm. We had a yearly program that we were doing. I had done a lot of trainings, you know, in Nigeria, abroad. So I think that helped build my own personal brand. It helps build my own credibility. It helped people know that, okay, I'm using my own money, you know, to do all of these things. At the time, we're not really making money, right? People, and like I said, you know, first the community was free and all that. So people could already see that this thing is difficult. What this girl is doing is actually difficult. She's putting her back into it. All my savings, everything was in the company. So that helped me gain credibility over the years. And like I said, I had a book. So I think that also helped to build some sort of authority in the industry. So that had gone on. So I had also been speaking to a lot of VCs, and they didn't really understand the idea of community. They were thinking, oh, are you trying to build another Facebook? There's a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how do I solve this, right? So one day I got into a program called Startup Bootcamp, which is a program that also gives funding to entrepreneurs. At the time, I think they were giving 18K with a lot of training and, you know, a lot of credits that, you know, would help any tech company, you know, get to that next level. So when I got into the program, I started, you know, talking to people, and, you know, someone said, you know what, you can actually try, you know, crowdfunding. And I was like, okay. So I put it up on my Insta stories and I said, hey guys, are you interested in investing in, at the time it was still AGS Tribe. We're trying to build a tech platform. I just wrote the story, and if you're interested, you know, let me know. And a lot of people said, I'm interested. I was like, wait, I think this was in August. I was like, oh, wait, I'm not ready. I was just, you know, testing it out. But I said, you know what, I'll take your details, and when we're actually ready, we'll come back, mm-hmm. you know, to you. So I went for the program in October. So while I was on the program, I had now done a Google form, and I put like minimums to say, okay, the minimum we'll take is 20K. When I was even putting that 20K, I was so scared. I was like, I don't know anybody who would just give me $20,000 like that, especially, you know, women.
$20,000?
Yes.
Not Naira.
Yeah. $20,000 like that.
You put jazz for mouth. How did you do it? And people really paid.
Wait, so I said, I put the minimums for people who wanted to be on the cap table. And then for anybody in the community who wanted to invest, you could invest as low as $10. And that would, we're taking that money through a platform called Get Equity.
Okay.
So anybody could invest. And we had, like I said, at the time, a huge community.
So that means you could convert their Naira for those who have Naira.
Yes. If through the Get Equity platform, it was easy for you to just convert. So we did that. And we got, when people filled out the Excel sheets and said how much they could put in, by the time we did everything, I got commitment of over $5 million. And I got scared, and I was like, you guys know that first you have to disburse immediately. Next, we only need 600. So we're not going, in fact, at the time, I think we were trying to even raise 500. I said, we only need 500. So we're only going to take 500. Eventually we had to take 600 because people were calling my family members all over the world. Like, please, we need to invest in this company. I started getting scared. Like, I hope you guys know that this thing is a risk. Like, obviously I'm going to do my best to make sure that
it works.
I'm not going to steal anybody's money. I'm going to be very credible, very transparent, let you know what is going on with the business and everything. But it's actually a risk. And, you know, I would do everything, but they're like, don't worry, anywhere you're going, we're going. I was like, okay. So I then had to even do another like investor stakeholder forum. So we explained to them again that this thing is a risk, but these are the possibilities, and these are, so pros and cons. You can lose all your money, or you can, you know, 10x, 5x your money. And we brought on people who had invested in companies like the Flutterwaves, who had also exited, you know, and some people who had also shared their stories of how their investments went bad, so that they understand the realities that
Not like you switch talked them.
No, you told them
the truth.
The truth, like,
of how investment can go.
It can go
sweet
even,
or sour.
Yes, even with the best people, like even with the best decisions, anything can, you know, just go wrong. You can just make a decision and that just, you know, shuts down all the work that you've been doing. So we try to be as, you know, transparent as possible. And people are like, oh yeah, so we're still interested. So like I said, at the time we had $5 million to choose from, and people. So we said, okay, this is the account number. So we took the first few people, you know, that were able to invest. And that's how it worked in 24 hours. Because at that time, people had fear of missing out as well. So a lot of people were like,
So one thing I have noticed in this conversation or the story you just told now is your wealth of human capital. Because if you didn't have the necessary human capital, trust me, it would be hard to push. How did you manage that human capital? Because one thing is for you to know people who can afford this. And another is for people who can afford this to trust you enough to say, you know what, whatever you do, I die here with you. I'm putting all that I can. I know you've explained, but I think that it's necessary that you explain further to us so we understand how people are able to trust $20,000.
Over
30, 40 million. That's a lot of money for somebody to take that kind of money to give to you. Apart from the fact that you know people who have the capacity to do that, but
a lot of people I didn't even know. That's the funny part.
So you see the point. And the thing is that, do you know that the people who are actually wealthy are the stingiest to invest in people's lives? So that's another thing. So how did you get them to actually ease off your... How did you build that confidence, that trust?
So I would say, you said that I must know people, right? So, and I think that takes you back to like my school, this kind of... schools I went to and all that. So my secondary school, and I'm still very in touch with them. I went to Vivian Fowler Secondary School.
You say what?
Vivian Fowler.
Yes. Oh, wow.
I then went to Covenant University.
You would have said it since now.
So you pulled a lot of... Yeah, so a lot of people, and I think it was such a blessing because I was first so sad that I went to Covenant because I didn't imagine that I was schooled in Nigeria when I was in secondary school. I even did Cambridge from SS2. So that's how I was like, okay, I'm going to London immediately after. And then all of a sudden, different things happened. And anyway, I went to Covenant. But today, when I look back, I think that was one of my greatest lessons and assets because I know so many people, credible people who are also doing well in their different, you know,
fields. I know a lot of you guys in Covenant like that. I like the network you share. I noticed that a lot of Covenant University people who have businesses support each other. I know someone who attended Covenant University and she started an e-marketing from home and it grew. So
So that network, you know, it really helped. So a lot of people I hadn't heard from, a lot of people reached out. So I think the schools you send your kids to really, really matter. And then you also have to be a loyal, credible person that shows up. So people know that if Ife is doing something, Ife is one that can pull all the Covenant people together, you know, and people will come. And if they're doing something too, I will show up no matter how tired I am. For example, I'll give an example. Tomorrow, I have a wedding in Lagos with one of my investors. I have a speaking engagement till 6 p.m. and I'm still going to go to Ibadan for my friend's sister's wedding tomorrow. And before I was like, maybe I wouldn't go. I'll be tired and going in the night, you know, and all that. But I'll still show up and she will never forget, you know, things like that. So just little things in the soft areas, not, you know, showing up softly, showing up in the hard times, you know, just being someone that shows up, you know, eventually.
So not saying it's not my thing to go out. Yes, it's not my thing and tired, you stay back.
You know, I can't do this. You have to just make sure that you, as much as possible, show up for people. Wow. It tells in the long run, you know, if you show up. Stand up.
Frank, did you take notes of that?
You have to show up, yeah.
Okay, so if you became Amazon's
partner,
first Nigerian recruiter partner through her economy, how did you do that? How did you become that? Because that's like a foundation to many of what you've done in the Nigerian business landscape. Tell us about it. What's your relationship with Amazon? How did that happen?
Okay, so I noticed that they had a lot of like diversity and inclusion initiatives. So I reached out to somebody within the team and sent him a proposal. And
how did you know somebody within the team? You see what I'm saying about your human capital. It's top-notch. You have to network.
So I sent in a proposal and, you know, at the time we already had like testimonials of people who had already gotten jobs from things that we had done. We had worked with Facebook. So when Facebook wanted to give a grant or different grants to people who had, you know, suffered losses during the COVID-19, so they came to meet us. So we had already done all of that, you know, gotten feedback. So it was bless you. So it was like a natural progression. It wasn't difficult.
So you were able to show evidence of how far you've come.
Exactly. And that we had a pool of credible people as well that they could tap into. Okay. So every year we've been doing this. We have like a lot of like recruitment programs. They've recruited a lot of people. And those people are actually currently winning awards in Amazon for the way that they're working. So they really love the economy. you know, community, and they're always happy to like renew the contract.
All right. So you said, first of all, you reached out to someone,
yes,
in, and then you were able to pull off all your evidences, mm-hmm, to them and all,
yes,
that.
Yeah.
And immediately, was it a go immediately?
Go or? Immediately. They're like, oh yes, let's do it. Yeah. So,
okay.
And yeah, they were able to get to what they wanted.
Does Ife Durotimi means grace? Does it mean grace? Because I see a lot of grace in you.
There are a lot of downtimes too. So it's not just everything. Tell yes, yes, yes.
Down. I was going to ask that. So let's hear about those downtimes.
Oh God. I don't know. Let's say people joining the team and then leaving abruptly. You know, people that, you know, you've really, really invested in it. Not even just professionally, even like personally, you know, a lot of disappointments along the way. People who you thought, this one, you know, ride or die. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, eventually you get disappointed.
Almost broke you.
Yeah. There's something you cannot say online.
you don't have to mention names, but which of them almost broke you and how did you come out strong? Because there are a lot of people who are watching who are going through downtimes.
Mm.
And all they need is just that little thread of hope on how to navigate this downtime. How did you come out strong? What was the incident? Can you share?
Okay. Which one should I say?
Oh, there were lots.
They're different. There are different things. There are different things that happen. You know, there are times where you realize that you have to really, really cut costs, you know, because your payroll, for example, is high and then you're not generating as much income, you know, things like that. The difficult conversations
This is a very important, important aspect of the business. You know, people think that
it's never rosy. You know, you have to have difficult conversations. You know, there are times you'll be having these conversations in the office and you're crying like, oh, I don't want you to go, but you know, this has to happen, you know, things like that. And it's a very difficult thing because when people see you, people just see, oh, you know, there's money, you raised $600,000 in 24 hours, but that money actually goes back into the business. The money is actually for things like, you know, you have to pay your AWS credits, your Google credits, your, you know, infrastructural costs that you cannot run away from. A lot of people don't know that in technology, it's not just about hiring people. There are consistent costs in dollars that you have to be paying, whether you're making money or not, right? So a lot of things that you don't really consider. A lot of times you get into all these programs, they give you credits, you don't realize that you're actually going to pay this money in the future at some point. So they'll give you the credits for maybe like a year or two. When that credit runs out, whether you've even finished the credit or not, once you finish that credit period, you have to actually start paying real cash. And this cash can go up to like $5,000 in, you know, cost. And those are costs that you need for the app to even open, you know? So those are things that people don't really think about. They think, oh, it's just let me hire one HR person. Let me hire one tech person and boom, your app is up and running, right? So sometimes there are difficult conversations that have to be had. You need to think about, there are times where I've said, you know what, I'm not going to earn any salary for a period because I know that, you know, we need to make sure that things are okay within the business. So it's very tough, like just navigating, you know, entrepreneurship in Nigeria, scaling, growing, entering into new markets. This year I wanted to start lending and it was very scary for me because I'm like, you are reading things like, people have like high non-performing loans.
Yeah.
So you're very scared and you're like, do you actually want to do this? But if you really want to scale, if you really want your revenues to grow, you have to do lending and your lending, you have to do it well. All right. You have to make sure that you keep your non-performing loans to the barest minimum because, you know, that's the beginning of the end when you start having high, you know, NPL.
So, all right. So you were speaking about the downtimes and I'm still very interested in it, especially in terms of how you managed those disappointments, human management, how you dealt with people whom you trusted and whom you felt that, like you said, you're ride or die. And then at the end of the day, you know, it was like, boom. How did you deal with your relationship with them prior to that incident and after that incident? How did you also manage your mental health after that incident?
You have to go to therapy. Like, wow. So
therapy is not a thing in Nigeria, by the way. You know, people barely practice that.
I'll just call my doctor. I'm like, I'm tired. And she'll just be like, oh, okay, you have to keep pushing. You have to do. She'll talk to me like, okay, you have to keep it going. So navigating it at the time, especially
for those who you really, really, really trust. Yes. You know, when they break it, like their own hurts, like it pierces on the back.
So I think firstly, in terms of managing those disappointments, you have to go back to your HR policies and make sure that you're protected as a business, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times when you're just starting out, you just go and download one HR policy from the internet and you just say, oh, okay, this company is big like this. This policy must be
Must be good.
It must be good, right?
And it's reasonable waiting at the pursuit for future. So let me just
So let me just do it. So, but you have to, you actually have to look at it and Nigerianize it and put it in the Nigerian context. Mm. So things like, okay, you're hiring like top level execs. You need to decide, do you want them to actually have 3 months for them to leave the company, or do you want them to give 3 months notice, or do you want it to just be 1 month notice? Mm-hmm. You know, little things like that, because when the time comes and you do not have the right policies in place to actually bite you, you know, in the future. So those were some of the lessons I took from it, and that was how I was able to manage it and navigate in the future. In terms of relationships with those people, you have to let it go. Like, it's difficult, you know, there are times you'll be so angry, like, see, this potopoto, we're going to enter this potopoto together. I'm going to be, you know, but you can't do that as a business professional. You have to just keep it simple. And I have like a good, like, advisory. I have a good board.
Oh, wow.
So awesome. Sometimes they help to mediate. Sometimes they advise me, okay, Fed, this is how you manage it, things, you know, but sometimes our human, emotional, you know, thing, you're just like, no, how can this person do me greasy? You know,
I was going to ask that, was there any point you felt like, I've lost it with humans, I can't deal?
Yes, that times where, like,
oh, wow.
I got to a point where I was like, you just come to work, do your work and go. Like, I'm not going to get emotional. I'm not going to ask her about your child. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do this. I'm not those emotional things. Like, are you okay? Have you eaten? Mm-mm. I better come do your work and go. So it got to that point.
Have to run a business, bring us together.
Yeah, like, please, I'm not even going to get emotional. But I just realized that that's not really me. I'm naturally, you know, very caring, very playful. But it got to the point when we started growing, the distance between myself and other team members was, you know, getting wider. Also, when you now start hiring people and you want to even empower those people, you want them to make decisions, you know, you don't want to now be encroaching on their decision making. Yeah. You want them to be free. You want them to be, you know,
to be
feel
truly
like,
independent.
So I started noticing that there was a distance. You know, my team members, sometimes when they see me, they will sit up. I'm like, I said, me, I'm very playful. I'm very cheerful. So, yeah. You know, you're shaking when you're coming to my office and all that. So I just started noticing, like, what's really going on? I don't think I'm this big, scary boss. You know, I think that I'm very playful and all that. So sometimes I'll just go sit down with them in the office and gist and laugh. You know,
I can imagine how uncomfortable they will feel within that period.
Eventually. But at the beginning, at the middle when I had experienced a lot and, you know, it just became more difficult, but I just like, so this is not
awkward.
Me. Yeah, it became very awkward.
Oh, wow.
But now, you know, everybody's chilled now. Now we're back again to being that one big family and stuff like that. Because when you get hurt, you know, it's difficult for you to
would you
trust again.
Would you say it's easier for you to deal with this hurt now than it was earlier?
Oh, yes. Now my skin is agaracha. There's nothing that can happen again. Like, drag me anywhere on the internet, drag me in the office. I will handle this professionally. I understand that these things happen. People will disappoint you. You keep it moving.
Awesome. So let us talk about gender now. Mm-hmm. Your company is female focused.
Yeah.
What happens to the men? So it's a very important question, because if you look at what is happening in the African business landscape, mm-hmm. especially with donors, relationship with donors, with funders. If you look at some of the theses of some of these mm-hmm. investment theses of some of these mm-hmm. VCs, some of them are tilting more towards the female empowerment program, women empowerment program. You hear of the girl child,
mm-hmm.
but you seldom hear of the boy child. Mm-hmm. And this is a very fundamental conversation, because I was reading an article and they were talking about the upward trajectory of women and how it is detrimental to that of the men as well.
Mm.
I don't know if you get my point. So mm-hmm. if you're training the boy child, you're sponsoring the girl child at the expense of the boy child, what happens to the boy child? So it looks like there's a lot of discrepancies. Let us have that conversation now.
Okay. So the truth is, and I think in my opinion, and I think also data shows it, the world was built to favor men. Let's not argue it. Let's not, you know.
I was almost going to jump on Frank's head on that conversation, because everything in the world was built to favor women.
Even like designing work to be 9 to 5. Little things like that you say, okay, yes, it's okay for men and women to go 9 to 5. But the truth is, a lot of times you see that women, most times, I'm not saying all, are the ones that are thinking about dropping off the kids in school, picking them up. They're the ones that actually get pregnant, because it is not possible for a man to get pregnant. They're the ones that will get pregnant. Sometimes they have to leave work. They take compulsory maternity leave, right? Some people may not be able to get back to work because they're down, they have mental health issues, they have other health issues that come with pregnancy, and they know that they have to take a long time off work. Sometimes they can't get back into the workforce. There's so many issues that are already against the women to even start with, right? So, which is why I see a lot of people, and that's not the only, those are not the only reasons, but those are some of the reasons why a lot of people are thinking about creating things that actually are tailored, you know, to help the women. But people don't neglect, I don't think the men are neglected. Like I said, the world has already been built to favor men, which is why there's now a small focus. I won't say it's not even a huge focus. There's a small focus on men. On women. A lot, also, you'd find out that there are a lot of male funders, right? Funding globally, maybe 4% goes to women, to female founders. Because one, we don't even have that many female founders to even start with. Not start talk of the ones that actually waste the long game or the ones that actually raise over $1 million. It's almost there. I think there are only about 4% of women who have actually raised over $1 million in the world, right? So you can already see that the stacks are already stacked against us, right? So if we don't create those specific funds, more than likely when somebody comes to pitch to you, most likely you're going to choose the man. Let me give you a simple example. I saw a video yesterday of the founder of Beyond Simi, who had worked not like crazy years in the investment banking space. I think over 10 years or something. She was now trying to start her business. She was about to raise funding. She had signed agreements with a couple of funders or investors. And the minute they heard she was pregnant, 4 investors pulled out. That case, a man can never experience it because a man cannot get pregnant. Do you understand? So if you don't create funds that are focused, and guess what? That business today is doing fantastically well. So I'm sure those people will be regretting. And thankfully, you know, that kind of thing where you say in your face, like, I did it anyway, you know? So we need more women to actually not just build big businesses and good businesses. They also need to tell the world and show the world what they're doing so that more people can see that we're actually doing this. We can actually do it. So trust us with your money. We're not going to run away with your money, you know, things like that. And already investors know that. A lot of times when they build their portfolio, it's not all the businesses that actually do well. So why can't you just entrust some in the hands of these women? Even though when you already know that some businesses are going to fail, that's not the focus, but at least give us that, specific fund and, you know, we'll make it
so
happen.
I see how interesting you've been. Okay, go ahead.
Do you think funding is gender-based? What do I mean by that? If I give you $1,000 and I say I need 10% return on investment on that $1,000, which is $1,100. In the business world, are you thinking of women? If I open a shop, do I want the woman to come patronize me or a man?
Not necessarily.
It's an open plane.
Yes, it's an open plane.
And so when...
But you'd find
we're
that...
We're talking about gender equality. Now. So it looks like it's no longer equal. The funders are thinking about women.
Not all the funders. Not all the funders.
We hear most of these social programs. We hear these grants.
They're still not enough.
Okay.
If you look at portfolio VC companies, and you look at their makeup of their portfolio companies, you still see more men. Check all the funders in Nigeria who are doing well. Their portfolio companies, more than likely you'd see.
So could it be that because most grants about women are advertised and that's why he thinks
There's a lot of advertisement and all that.
For grants for women.
Not even just grants, even funding generally.
So why do you think that they have to do make special effort to advertise or publicize grants for women?
Because women don't apply.
Oh,
that's another problem too.
So there's an extra push.
I've had women tell me, because we give out grants to women, right? And part of the process is that they have to do a video pitch. So they have to submit their video pitches and all that. They tell me, I cannot do it. I don't want my husband to see it. My husband will think I'm begging on the internet. There's all sorts of issues. Some women, there was one woman we gave a grant to 2 years ago. And this year, we were now partnering with a bigger organization. And the girl's husband reached out to the organization and said, ah, why do you trust that company? They said they're going to give my wife a grant. They didn't give her. And they were putting her name all over the internet as if they gave her. They're a fraud. So this woman reached out to me and said, ah, Ife, please, what is this? I'm reading. I don't like this. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that's weird. Everybody who we've said we're going to give money to, we've given them the money. So we started digging deep. And we pay money into our economy accounts for all our beneficiaries, because obviously you must have an economy account once you win and all that. And truth be told, we had actually paid her, but she did not tell her husband, because the husband would have collected the money. So he went to meet her, started. So I had to give this woman this information. I started calling the girl, calling her. That was going on. Did you not get the money? Before we now even check, I'm like, hold on, we can actually check this thing out. So we gave the company feedback, and she now had to go back to meet him. That's how she, in fact, obviously that would have caused another problem at home.
Yay.
She had collected the money, spent it, and told him that she didn't get the money. So there's so many.
She did not use it for the business.
Must have used it for the business.
Okay.
But if that man had known, he would have collected the money. And it happens in a lot of homes like that. A lot of women who are making money, they maybe put their salary accounts as their husband's account, or they're paying the money into their husband's account. Immediately they get the money. All kinds of things are happening in the world when it comes to women. A lot of people confuse submission for stupidity, you know?
Is that a gender thing? Is that not governance?
No, I think that's a culture thing. It's a culture thing. It's culture. It's like culturally, some people believe that.
And that's what corporate governance comes to solve. So if you give businesses money, there has to be some things in place to checkmate all the excesses that comes with giving them money. So when you fund entrepreneurs, what are the things you look out for when you give them money?
I was still going to come back to that gender thing, but when you're done, because I'm very interested in it.
Do you just leave them to do anything they want with that money? How do you manage the entire portfolio to make sure that whatever they said they're going to use that money for is what they actually said they're going to use it for? Because that's a fundamental problem.
So we actually do that. That's why the money is actually paid into their economy accounts, right? To start with. And periodically we check up on them. Okay, what have you done? How's business growing? Have you hired more people? Have you expanded your products offering? You know, all of that. And we also do capacity building workshops for them. But guess what? People can still fabricate things.
I was going to tell you that this is Nigeria.
It is almost impossible to over-monitor them to the T. Do you understand? Wow. So it's almost impossible. I've collected grants from companies before too. So it's almost, you would say, oh yes, the company has grown, and you hire people. Let's say, okay, you hire somebody and you're paying the person maybe 100K or 200K if it's a small business and all that. The remaining money, your husband will have collected it. Do you understand? I know people have collected money, obviously. So some companies give out grants and they don't really follow up. And they've gone to marry other wives. If you hear all kinds of things, and that's why, you know, sometimes it's difficult for you to continue to trust when people, you know, use the money for things that they're not necessarily supposed to use the money for, but those are not the people that we're talking about. Sometimes when women get not even just funding for their businesses, even salaries, they just submit it to their husbands because that's what they feel like submission is, you know. So there are different things that go on culturally in Nigeria. Abroad, it might not be their own issue, but in Nigeria we are pulled back, you know, culturally, and we're not as exposed, so a lot of women are still, you know, doing things in certain ways.
So did you set out to run a business that encourages women from
from the get-go, even the community, because of my experience, you know, growing up. So
that's what you see, Frank Ngwa, listen to her. So I like to hear, because you sounded very passionate when Frank asked that question. You just faced him rather than was, you know, facing the conversation squarely. I thought that there may be a backstory to that.
So my mom is a lawyer, my dad is a chemical engineer and also a politician, and so my dad was, you know, the main breadwinner with family. He did most things for us.
Even though your mother is a lawyer. That,
even though my mom was a lawyer, but eventually she quit her career.
Legal profession.
Yes, to, you know, focus on the children and all that. And then 17 years later, she went to start a business. My mom and my dad had split up at the time, and she realized that she didn't have savings. And it wasn't as if, so obviously my dad was taking care of all of us. We never lacked anything. We went to the best schools. You know, everything was going on. But she didn't have savings. So her life literally, it changed in a minute. So
there was no way to continue.
Yeah, we had to move to a Butemeta. We had to buy a better pass my neighbor generator, things that I'd never seen before. Like it was a huge change, you know, for even me as a child. We now had a fan, like a ceiling fan in the house. Growing up, I didn't have fans in my, it was AC that I knew. So it was so difficult, but we had to have the fan because better pass my neighbor is not going to carry the AC, you know.
So at things the time like she that, left, sorry for asking, prying into your family issues, but at the time she left, your dad didn't make comfortable provision for all of you, understanding that you were
not all of us. My I was still even in my dad's house. Okay. So if I go to school and I come back home, I'll go and stay with my mom. You know,
so he
like
didn't
that.
Just make okay, this is not my wife now. Make her just
they were
get
not
her.
Together
give
anymore.
Her, but he can as well give her a home to settle in and all
it doesn't
that.
Happen like that in real life.
Sorry.
It doesn't happen like because it was my mom that chose to move out, right? So it doesn't necessarily happen that, okay. And even when you even get that, because now you know that you're on your own, you would just try to manage, you know, what you have.
What you're saying is very important.
It happens
for women who are in
lot.
Relationships and marriages to know how they can.
They can,
you know,
also, even when you're a housewife,
themselves.
you can grow your wealth. You can save. You can invest. You know, there are different.
So let's finish that business. That story.
So I saw how my mom struggled. She had to get a shop in Lagos Island. You know, it was tough, and I was just like, ah. This woman, she's strong because, you know, she had to start all over again.
So she set out, she left her legal profession. She forgot about the finesse that comes with being a lawyer.
She even still
and
had,
she,
so
and
she
entered the streets.
She entered
to
the streets. Guess what? She even had one small legal firm in Igboshere that she just set up and everything. She was hustling, doing different things. Today, obviously, my mom is a baby girl. Today, she's okay.
Whoa.
And everything. But at the beginning,
how did she manage from that place she was with your dad to back to the street to hustle?
You have to, I think that's something that every woman has to have. You have to have the spirit of hustle, no matter where you find yourself. I had another auntie who her husband passed before he was 40, and you know, the family came immediately, took the house, took everything. They wanted to take the kids, so they had to run off and all that. And I remember advising her, I think I was even 18 at the time, I said, don't move to she wanted to move to Ajangbadi or something. I said, don't move to Ajangbadi, please, because your children will be Ungbati. That's what they'll be speaking. This is not to shame anybody that lives in that area, but I wanted her to understand the choice that she had. So I was like, this same money you have that is going to get you a house in Ajangbadi, I believe that you can get something in Aja, move to Aja, even if it's a one bed. So I advised her, and I was 18, but she took it. My auntie went, got a place in Aja, a one bed. I think it was even like Face Me or something. Face Me, I slapped it. So, but she was okay. Her children were going to a school around the area. Eventually, her son went to Babcock, read computer science. He graduated. He's now working in London.
How did she find the child in Babcock?
She eventually started first the kiosk business. Eventually, she now started doing drinks, and then eventually, she started doing blocks. So she started doing
ice block making measures.
No, blocks for building.
Oh, building blocks.
She eventually built her own block factory and everything. And she just started growing from there. So she built her house. She bought land, built her house in Aja. And you know, when you're doing that business, you'll be networking with all those boys. So they'll be helping you build. And she built a fantastic bungalow in Aja. She was okay. You know, she sent her children to school. Her second daughter is married. Her last son is also in a private university. She's doing very, very well. And this was her starting from scratch without a university degree. So I tell women, you have to have that spirit of hustle. Like me, I know that no matter what happens to me, this is my bare hands. I've worked in shops or in restaurants like Burger King. I've done all kinds of businesses, sales, door-to-door sales, all kinds of things. So
your mother
and
your auntie's story obviously shaped your decision to ensuring that you work towards something
financial
that can enable women.
Yes. Wow. You know, financial independence is so important. And there are so many things you can do. Today, you can get a job abroad. You know, there are platforms like Upwork. There's so many things that you can do even when you're working from home. Let's say you decide to be a stay-at-home mom. So I tell people, don't just sit at home. You have to be earning something. That's your dignity. That's the respect. That's your power. You can't just sit around. No matter how rich your husband is, anything can happen in the twinkle of an eye. You might eventually even have to even support him if he has a downtime. He's just one person. Be able to support your husband. That's what earns you, you know, his respect at some point. Because we're all human beings, no matter how much,
because sometimes,
you know,
a man
your husband
may be down
loves
too.
You. Yeah, he can be down. It happens to each and every one of us. Life can never just be a smooth journey. So you should also be able to bring, you know, something to the table, you know. So.
You know, that, but from looking at your story, you almost sound like, it's almost, you're almost like a typical example of a jack of all trade but master of all, not none. So let's talk about your startup, which is the Bambi.
Yeah, Parlamo Bambi.
Yeah, good. How, of all things you started with, making furniture for kids, like Cradle, How did you conceptualize that?
So, as a human being, you solve the problems that, you know, you're experiencing, right? So I had my daughter in London at the time, and the natural thing was to have like your wish list. You know, when you have your baby shower, you have like a baby wish list, and you know, people just buy all the gifts from your wish list and all that. So people bought like my cards, everything. So I shipped them down to Nigeria. I didn't even know that furniture was contraband. So when it came back to Nigeria, they told me, oh, that I needed to pay a particular amount to be able to collect it and all that. I was like, ah, you know, what's going on here? Like, it was almost more than the amount of the actual item. Furniture. So I was like, so why are people not making furniture locally for children? So children's furniture is very different. It has to be safe, the paint you use, all of those things. Mm. You need to take that into consideration.
Very environmentally friendly.
Yeah, friendly. Mm. So we decided, I had a business partner at the time. We came together. I did my daughter's room and it was so beautiful. So people used to ask me, how did you do this room? You know, I was like, this thing, it wasn't that difficult for me. So I started thinking about it. And, you know, I spoke to my friend. I was like, I've been thinking about doing something for kids. You know, what do you think? And she was like, I've also been thinking about doing something for kids. And that's how, you know, we just started it. And we just started getting orders. The thing blew, you know, through the roof. And
that your network again worked a lot.
Yes. And guess what? They were my friends and I were all giving birth around the same time.
So everyone was just using your furniture.
They were just buying it. They were just, in fact, people still tell me till today that I've been using your furniture, I still have it, you know, I sold it, you know, things like that.
So what is that business today?
Girl. We had to stop.
She said girl.
We had to stop it because we realized
it was
that
beautiful.
It was, and people still actually request for
so
it.
So you
now
can reignite it, you can do something.
Yes, but the problem was that so at the beginning, when you're starting out, you know, you have one order, 10 orders. When you now start having 20 orders, how do you fulfill it?
Factory.
So wait time. Yeah, we had a factory. Wait time grew from 2 weeks to 3 months.
Oh.
And people cannot wait that long. Mm. You can't even have people wait that long.
So you may start having that confidence
deficit. Exactly. Apart from that, you know, when you deliver things, you know, some people's windows, you can't even, or their houses, you can't carry it into the house. You know, and because of the way we build, it wasn't totally flat packed the way you build abroad. So all of those issues, you know, were happening. And then the cost now eventually had to now become higher. Mm. So when you now think about it, if the cost is too high, then people just be like, I might as well just go and buy the ready-made one.
Very true.
So there was now no point anymore because we couldn't keep the cost down. To keep the cost down,
because production costs.
Very, very expensive. We had a factory. In fact, they robbed us in the factory. My carpenter's hand, he wasn't wearing his gloves. He cut off his fingers, cut off. Like, you know, you're in hospital. This Nigerian artisans, like, you continue telling them, you have to do this, you know, safety. Yeah. But they're not used to doing it with all the gloves and everything. So when you're not there, pian, pian. We had cameras. They'll remove everything. So this guy was like, I want my gloves. If you want the glove we also cut. Do you understand? He was so clear that he did not wear it. So we went back to watch the cameras. And he was not
so
wearing
his
gloves.
Fingers.
He lost it. So we had to rush him to the hospital. It was just a lot. I was just like, I cannot. This business is tough. So,
at what point do you know to give up in something? I think that's a very... When do you give up? What makes you know that, I'm done. I need to move on to
another thing. So that business, that wasn't the only thing that also made us realize that, you know, it's been there to stop, because we could have just increased the prices and, you know, just targeted the top 1% in Nigeria. But we also had like co-founder issues. My co-founder was my friend as well. Oh. So at the beginning, you know, when you're first starting out your business, you don't really do like partnership agreements. You don't really think about things like that, especially when you're younger. You just say, let's do it. You don't know that the business is really going to grow. You don't even know your strengths enough to know the kind of co-founder you would need, you know, at the time. You don't really think about those sort of things. So we started having like co-founder issues and all that. So we're just like, you know what? Let's just, you know, pack it up. Today we're still friends. So
did she move
up
to another business similar?
Yeah, she started doing baskets and stuff for children as well. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So firsthand, you
and
had
I started doing
firsthand had co-founders issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll need to double down on that because if you look at many of the companies, if you see many companies that are folded up, when you check what really played out, you see a co-founders disagreement. Yeah. What do you think you would have done better to be in sync with your co-founder and you guys have a vision that is in sync for the company, for the greater good?
Yeah, so I think that we both had the West both mission aligned. So I don't think we were not mission aligned. So I think it was more of a responsibility thing. So at the time when we started, so I know people, you know, I knew people and all of that, but I didn't know that I knew people like that, you know, when I first started.
So you were attracting most of
the customers and stuff. So it eventually felt like, oh, when we split up, when the customers also, because they came through me, they would also want me to be the one to, you know, fulfill the transaction from beginning to end. So from like side visits, you know, things like that. So eventually I became overwhelmed. And all because I'm the one that, okay, after work, then I was working in Nigerian Breweries. I'll go to work. After work, when you come back home, that's when you now have to go to see customers and all that. So she was working in Ajah at the time. So it was also difficult for her to see customers. So it felt like a lot of load was on
you
me.
While we shared the profits.
Yeah, exactly. It was very, funny enough, we're not even sharing profit. We're just on a salary. So it wasn't like we're sharing profits because all the profits just literally
But then if you receive the same salary, then that won't be fair because you put in more work than the other person.
Yes, you will. But when you're running a business, you don't really think about it. Oh, well, I don't really think about it. I'm just thinking, let's just get it done. It's not anybody's fault that one person, you know, knows more people and all that, you know. So all those kind of things came into place. After some time, I was just like, you know, writing grants, you know, applying for these opportunities, you know, things like that. You know, you're the one, you know, applying for those things. So it just became a bit tough, you know. And, you know, once you start getting those opportunities, one person also becomes more visible, you know, so all of those things can eventually cause challenges and all that, but we're able to navigate it without, you know, breaking the friendship or spoiling the friendship. But I think what is important for people to take out is to have like a partnership agreement. What is your own role from the get-go? What is your own role and responsibility?
Based on your capacity.
Yes, based on
what
your
do you
capacity.
Think, even if you don't have the immediate enabling environment, but what do you think you can do based on who you are?
Yes, based on and who then, you are. Exactly. So she had a lot of HR experience. But at the time,
and
we
you
didn't really
complemented
think,
each other very
well. Yeah, we didn't really think that HR was a big thing. A lot of people don't realize that human resource is actually a big thing, and that's a huge strength for somebody to, you know, be able to have. So she was, you know, mainly like managing the artisans and all that, and she knew how to do it very well. So it was good, but after some time it became very, oh, how come, you know, you're the one on the newspaper? How come you're the one on this? It just became not necessarily from her, even just from like human beings, you know, just watching. And, you know, sometimes that can build tension, you know, between co-founders and all that, because it now looks like, oh, one person is getting more opportunity than the other person and stuff like that. So yeah, if you are not able to manage those things, you know, sometimes egos can be burnt, you know, and so.
All right. So before we proceed to, you know, further, I'd like to know, looking at yourself, your 18 years of self, that advice you earned and all that, did you imagine you'd get to where you are today?
I knew that I would be successful no matter the path. I already knew, and I knew that I would not be dependent on anybody. I knew that I was always going to work no matter what it was. I already knew that. So, but I just didn't know what I'll be doing. In fact, when I wrote my book, Honorable Akin Oyebode, he told me, if I are still going to do finance, and I was like, me, can never do it. You know, so even when I was almost close to here, I never thought that I would actually have a finance company or do anything finance. So I feel like, you know, life is like a banana. You continue opening and just trying out, you know, different things and understanding yourself more and just seeing more of your capabilities. But if you don't try, you never know what you're able to do. The first time I wrote a grant, I never imagined that I'll get it. My dad saw the Tony Rimelu grant on the news.
I wrote though, I never got. So I'm impressed that he did. I've written before I never got. So I can imagine.
He saw it in the news and he was like, oh, if I think you'd get this. And, you know, I think he saw it when the first one was announced. Okay. So I was like, oh, daddy, this thing is closed now. He was like, hey. Okay, I was like, okay, I'll keep tabs on this thing. So next year, I'll apply for it. So 9 months later, it reopened again. I just applied. And when it even came out, I didn't even expect my name to be there. So when I even checked the list, because I already had that mindset that my name was not going to be there, I didn't see my name. So my friend now come and say, "Your name is there, your name is there." I was like, no, it's a lie. You know, so I cried. I was like, oh my God. So I actually got in. And that just really, really boosted my confidence. You know, like, oh my gosh, you know, like this, and the way they even publicize it. And, you know, this is like business that can transform Africa and all
and
that.
And you are transforming Africa.
you know.
How do you apply for grants? Let us, let us double down on that a little bit. Because there are so many people who write grants, people like Precious.
I didn't get it.
Here you go. That is, so I'm a typical example. It's okay.
So how do you teach people like Precious? What are funders looking for?
Mm-hmm.
What, when you're applying for grant, what do you need to do? Because you've won a lot. You've look at your resume. You've gotten fundings from grants from different organizations and institutions. So what is that? What is that golden pen advice? That
I'm interested in this, especially because of the kind of business I was writing grant for.
Okay.
I think it's quite different from what you do, because
okay.
mine was service based and not particularly on any kind of goods. So I like to understand.
Okay, firstly, I always tell people that you actually have to be solving a real problem. So some people feel like, oh, because I'm doing hair business, I'm just going to apply for a grant, and because this business is doing well, they're going to give me. And even though hair business is very profitable, you know, I buy hair all the time and all that. But when you're thinking of the larger scheme of things, what are the real problems that people are facing in the world? What are funders looking out for? So I always tell people the best place to look at these issues are from the Sustainable Development Goals. Mm-hmm. There are 17 goals, quality education, gender equality, you know, things like that, that are actually, issues that, you know, the world knows. So if you streamline your solution to fit or plug into one of these challenges, you're first, you have, you know, your foot in the door. But if you're just doing something that, you know, even though, you know, it's a good business, you know, it's, if it's not something that is scalable, that is a problem that people actually really, really need, they're not, you're not going to be funded. No matter how profitable, you know, the business is, you would most likely maybe get funding from a VC that, you know, is just looking for quick returns or returns in the future. But funders, like impact funders, grants, you really, really have to be solving a real problem that is magnanimous. And that way, you know, you're able to, so environmental issues, you know, clean energy issues, you know, things like that, climate change, issues that, you know, poverty. Are core, poverty, poverty elevation. Think like for us now, financial inclusion can elevate poverty. So more than likely, when you pitch it to somebody, they'll be like, and they're also mission aligned, then you're more than likely. So it's important for you to also find the organizations that are aligned with you. So there's some funders that are interested in climate energy. I can't go and pitch to them. They're just looking at me like, need to read, need to check us out, need to do your research. Very if you don't do your research, that means, in fact, you're already going to fail, because that means you don't even think about things before you jump. You know, so you have to also be mission aligned. And then the way you write, you can't just write anyhow. You have to write in a convincing way. You have to storytell, you know. You have to show your impact. How many people have benefited from you? So some people off the back, and men do it a lot. Even with a paper, they can just go and raise $10 million. But I always tell people the real people that actually really, really raise funding are people who already have, you know, beneficiaries, people who have put their back against the wall to actually impact the lives of the people around them.
Yeah.
You know, some of them even have volunteers, people who believe, you know, in what you're doing, that will say, okay, I'll actually come and teach people in this school. You know, my friend was the first Nigerian CEO for Teach for Nigeria. And I remember when she got the job and she was like, oh, her salary was going to be this way. Like, ah, babe, you know, yeah, really, really on the run. She did not know that she was going to work for that money.
Oh.
And she started working for the money, raising the funding. You know, it was very, very difficult at the beginning. But eventually, because she was solving a real problem in a very, very innovative way, she was able to raise millions of dollars for the business, right? Or for the NGO. It's actually an NGO. So my point is, you actually need to go out. You actually need to share your story. You have to also be visible. You have to write well, because people, they research you when you apply for these things. They want to see that you have, you know, digital footprint as well. They want to see other people that have actually written about you to say, okay, you're actually doing well. They want to see that you actually have, and don't go and start chasing newspaper features and all that. You know, if you're doing well, those things will come. I've never actually sought out for it. Sometimes I even turn lots of things down because I'm just overwhelmed and I just want to just focus on my work. But it's important for you to have a digital footprint. Show your stuff on your Instagram, your LinkedIn, where credible people are. You know, sometimes I've gone to pitch my business to people and they'll be like, oh, I've seen her economy before, and it's an easier conversation.
Yeah.
But if people have never seen your brand before, it's difficult for them to open the door to you. It's difficult for them to trust you, you know. But if you're already like out there trying to be visible, fighting for your you know, for your business to blow and all that, they'll rather take their money somewhere else to somebody who is more hungry. So yeah, those things, you know, help you. And apply for the small ones, the big ones, and not just grants. You know, I got into Acumen, for example, which is an organization that focuses on leadership skills as an individual. And, you know, people have been telling me, if I apply for Acumen, I think it's a fantastic program. And at the time I was like, I just want people that can give me, I'm not going to apply for things that can give me money. I've done a lot of programs. And the person was like, this program is phenomenal and life-changing. So I was like, okay, I'm going to apply for it. And luckily for me, I got in. I didn't even realize that when you get in, you can actually still get grant funding, right? And that's why a lot of people are short-sighted. You know, they just want money, money, money. But if you go into these programs, if you go into these fellowships, not only can your friends fund you. You know, I have friends who I met in fellowships who eventually funded Hekonomi, right? And they, I got more funding from the collective than even the fellowship that I got into, right? So I tell people, your network is so important. You know, the way you show up in those spaces, you know, also matter. Get into these programs. Don't only think about funding. Think about even business opportunities that you can get from those programs. Now, I have friends in different area codes across the world. Anywhere I go to, I have somebody's house I can sleep in. Nigeria, outside Nigeria, there's always somebody. People even reach out to me. Oh, I saw that you're coming to New York. You can actually stay in my house. You know, there was one babe, I was like, why
so you don't have to do hotel?
I didn't have to book a hotel. So at first I was like, no. I was in a hotel, but I just thought about it. When I checked the amount of hotel, I said, I'm coming to you. Yeah. And eventually I went to her, and today she's become a close friend. Mm. So I just met her on LinkedIn. You know, so sometimes some people will be scared and they'll be like, no, I'm not doing that too. I don't know her from Adam. You are too proud. But I've connected her to opportunities. She's connected me to opportunities. You know, you just meet people who are mission aligned and they just want to just collaborate with you in some sort of way. So don't just be so closed up. I respond to all my DMs. Some people are like, I'm too big. Why are they messaging me? I respond to everything by myself. Even with the small ones, they feel, you know, some people, they have big egos. They're too proud when they've not achieved anything.
Do you think it's an African thing?
It's
global.
A lot of people are so, once they achieve one small thing, they believe they've arrived. They are Jesus Christ. Me, I tell God, I want to remain humble forever, no matter the level I get into. So I respond to all DMs. You know, I try as much as possible to help within my capacity. You know, things like that. So, because the opportunities come in different places, you know.
So, do you think that can grants and donations sustain a business?
Not necessarily. I don't think. Now, yeah.
Because a lot of people build their businesses for funding, for grant. They don't build for sustainability. And so I think it was Aki and Libby that said it, that the best kind of funds you can get is that of your customers.
Yes.
And it looks like we're experiencing a shift, especially if we talk about your industry, fintech and even the tech ecosystem in general. You see people building businesses just to please investors, people building positioning for funding rather than positioning for customers.
Yeah.
Let's address that.
That's actually true, especially because when you start hearing the big numbers, this person raised $10 million, this person raised $100 million, and they start to think, what am I doing wrong? And then you now want to mirror your business to those kinds of businesses. Yeah. But it's very important for you to build for sustainability, build for customers. Even where we started, you know, we used to give out grants. You know, I was always struggling every year. I'm trying to look for partners and all that. And it was very, very difficult for us to, you know, think about revenue. You know, so we now had to, you know, change our business model to make sure that, you know, we're profitable. And it's still a very difficult, we're still on that journey actually. And it's very, very difficult, but it's important as any business to make sure that your customers are actually paying. What's your customer acquisition cost? How can you make sure that you're generating more revenue than it was for you to acquire that customer? And that's where you now hit success. But for a lot of tech companies, it's very, very difficult for you to do that because there are a lot of other costs that's associated with, you know, acquiring the customers. So, which is why funding is very, very important at the beginning to scale. It gets to a point where your business is stable enough. By the beginning, more than likely you will need funding to first be stable before you now start thinking about, you know, even though from the beginning you would have built like a profitability, you would have said, okay, if we do things like this within like 2 years or 3 years, we will become, you know, profitable. But it's very, very difficult for you to be profitable from day one, especially as a fintech. Some people have done it, you know, successfully. If I know well, one of the big fintechs, the way they started out doing like, B2B for they used to build software for the banking platform. So they already had enough revenue for them to start their own fintech, right? But for a lot of us where we're starting from ground zero, it's difficult for you to start like that. So you cannot fire away, you know, very another true. Organization. So it's important for you to look at your own business, your own circumstances. Mm. Some people have funding from their parents. You know, some people have offices from their parents, so they don't necessarily need to be paying, you know, for an office. So there are different people have peculiar situations. So it's important for you to think about your own situation and your own benefits, the things that you have over another organization, and just use that, you know, to your own advantage.
All right. So speaking about offices now, something just struck my mind. I'd like to ask if startups, people are starting businesses, would you rather someone start at home now or get a little space, no matter how small?
I started on my dining table. Uh-huh. And to be honest, it depends on how passionate you are about starting. I thought we'll start from where you are.
Okay.
You know, so why? Just because you have to start.
Okay.
Right? So,
and it doesn't matter the perception, because some people were like, I want people to come to my office and know that
that is ego. Office. That is your ego talking. Mm. You know, so it doesn't matter. They will come to your house and there's no shame. See, you cannot shame the shameless. Me, I'm not even ashamed of anything. So if I can even be in an office now, and if Kakara should bust tomorrow, I will go back home and continue working from home. And when we have money again, I'll go back and get an office. So there's no shame in this thing. You have to be able to roll up your sleeves at any time, and think about how you can make that business work. Right?
Awesome.
So wherever you are, start. So I sat on my dining table. We were there for like 2 years. Grew from one person. Sometimes we'll have deadlines to meet. My staff, they'll sleep in my house. You know, all kinds of things. Some people say, I cannot bring anybody I don't know into my home. I don't have hotel money to pay for anybody. So we pin. Just so there are different things that you have to do. You know, eventually, one of my uncle said, I could move into one of his offices and I could stay in one room with my team. So for another like 2 years, we were in another small room. Eight of us, we'll just sit down there. Maybe at the beginning, we were like four. We grew to eight. We were there, till we eventually had to leave that office to get our own, you know, office space. So there's no hard and fast rule. Start from where you are. Some offices, some people don't even need offices to start. Some people are fully digital and they work well. So if you can save on that office space, why not? You know?
Give us some success metrics you've had with some people you've invested in, companies, some donations you've given out, or even as an investment firm, people you've invested in, and you were, wow, they gave you...
Okay.
Best kind of result.
Okay, so we're not an investment firm. Yeah. So we're a savings company that's slowly transitioning into a bank.
Yeah.
Now we've also started lending. So let me
so
just
you
want
to go into
that.
Lending because
yeah,
of the
yeah,
lending
yes.
Part. Yeah.
So okay, so let me give
even
some examples.
And we also even with the profits you give,
yes,
it also makes it look somehow like an investment. Yeah.
Yes. So we give grants to women. So I'll just talk about some of the success stories. So there was a lady who was a street sweeper. Who she just used to sweep on the road and all that, and they started a small, like she discovered recycling. So when she saw that, there was this grant where the winner was going to get 1.5 million, second runner up, or first runner up, 1 million, and the third or second runner up, 500,000, she applied. And so when you apply, you go through a training process. We teach you how to pitch, how to present your business in a more professional way, so that when you're not pitching to the panel of judges, then you come off as a company that, you know, is investable. So eventually this lady won. Somebody that she had never pitched, you know, in her life. When she won, her story was so powerful that somebody else who is also an investor in her economy said she wanted to double her grant. So she eventually won 3 million naira from us that day.
Wow.
Eventually this lady, her information, you know, went out there. And that's one thing that all these opportunities gives you. It gives you a lot of visibility. So there's a lot of visibility that came from it. She got a lot of more opportunities, you know, within the country, even in her state. So her state's governor picked up on her from some of the articles that we had written, and then invited her to even become one of his special advisors on environment. You know, I think she has a library where she now displays some of the things gallery where she displays some of her, bless you, some of her products or end products or some of the recyclable material. And she's doing extremely well. She's now hired people. I think she now has like over 20 people that she's paying from nothing. Like she said, when she talked about her economy, she's like, economy transformed her life, you know. So there's so many stories like that. We have somebody else, she's the founder of Fez. She won a grant from us, I think in maybe 2022. And she was the first runner up, not the winner. And from then on, she was also very active within the community. So we helped her to revamp her CV, you know, we boosted her, or we helped her, you know, a lot of training she had gone through, you know, she had confidence, everything skyrocketed. So eventually she first got a job with one of these popular fintechs as a COO. Yeah. Right after we helped, you know, revamp her CV, she worked there and eventually started her own, or she continued her own logistics business. She had gotten started logistics business already at the time, but was still very, very small scale. Today, from the visibility, training, everything, and I'm sure obviously she also had it in her, but eventually today her business, it has skyrocketed. Wow. It is massive. She currently has over 200 employees.
Wow.
She's gotten funding over $1 million since
200
started.
Employees is not a mean feat.
It's not a joke. Like she's doing extremely well.
Wow.
You know, and she also gives back even to her economy. So now her company now even funds, you know, that program that you know we do. She's a phenomenal fan. And she's one of the ones that, you know, we're very, very proud of. And we only gave her $1 million, you know, grant. So grant, visibility, training, part of the community and all that. So, you know, she even went, we went to the UN together at some point on like for a program. So she's one of those people who, you know, have multiplied, you know, what she's gotten. And today, not only does she even give back to us, she also does it, you know, for other, you know, smaller business owners. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so many stories like that, that, you know, we're proud of. And, you know, we try to continue doing this.
Does that propel you to keep pushing?
Oh yes. When I see these people, like be big, get better, you know, do better, do more for your communities. You know, those are things that, you know, give us joy. You know, the goal is financial, you know, freedom for women. So when I see all of these women doing well, you know, impacting the lives of other people, it gives me so much, you know, joy. It tells me that, you know, we're doing something good.
So but what apart from this, okay. Yeah.
I was going to say that apart from this, the aspect that, you know, you see that the women are doing well, you're also getting globally recognized. I mean, your recognition with NASDAQ, that's not easy. Mm-hmm. That's like a US 100. You know that, right? How far? How did you do it in Nigeria? Okay. I don't want to say ordinary Nigerian girl. A normal Nigerian girl.
I'm ordinary.
So how did you do that? A lot of people would not know how big NASDAQ is.
Yeah.
How did you pull that?
So again, NASDAQ, they had a program, a program within their entrepreneurship center, and we applied and we got
there. How did you know?
Ha! This opportunity is internet.
No, I'm coming.
Internet.
I want to know. How did you know? Because not everybody in Nigeria will want to quickly apply to a NASDAQ or a, you know, top 500. Not that.
Everything. And the truth is, you apply for so many, I only get like 3% of the ones that I apply to.
Oh, because you always apply.
You always have to try. So you win some and you lose many. Do you understand? And there are times when I've even, because I review a lot of people's applications as well, because I'm quite good at applying. And guess what? We'll apply for the same thing. Those people that I review, they're the ones that will get in. And so that tells me, like, it's not as if I do not apply well, it's just not my time. You know, so for example, the Mandela Washington Fellowship, I applied 3 times before I got in. You know, I'll even get to interview stage, drop off, you know, things like that. So I know it's not my application that is not good, you know. Sometimes it's just limits. They can only take a particular, maybe 10 people from Lagos State, or, you know, things like that, or from Nigeria. So it's very, very, some of these things are extremely competitive. So I always tell people, just continue applying. And you never know, one day, luck will shine on your head. So yeah, you just have to keep applying. So we also share some of those opportunities on our platform. So we actually always look out for them. So the ones we see that we're qualified for, we'll apply. There are some that we're not even qualified for, and we'll write a justification that, you know, because some of them will tell you, oh, we would actually, on a case-by-case basis, look at some of these applications. So you can write your justification. I will write my justification. And some will get, some we wouldn't get in. There was even one that I applied for where they said, oh, it was only open to Nigerians. And by mistake, I uploaded my British passport instead of Nigerian passport.
Right.
I said, God, what kind of devil is on my head?
Your village, you know, people that were not there.
People. Do you know what I did? I went on LinkedIn. I just searched for everybody who worked in that organization, and I emailed all of them. I sent them like direct messages on LinkedIn. Oh, I made a mistake. I did. I'm Nigerian. I also have a Nigerian passport. And one person responded, and I got in. So sometimes you just don't know. Just apply. You have to be a bulldog. If not, you are either eat or be eaten in this life. So you have to, you just have to continue trying.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Exactly.
So like, I think that's really, 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 really fundamental to grab from what you've said all this while. Increase your surface area of luck.
Yeah.
And what's your take on luck? Do you believe in the concept of luck?
I believe in luck. I believe in grace. I believe in grace. Yes. So
perhaps why I asked if you have to just your name trying. In any way means grace.
You have to just continue trying. Wow. You have to just continue trying and continue building like credibility and stamina on the journey, because one day you need it in front.
So you don't think luck has anything to do with what happens?
Especially
those.
There's nothing like luck.
But you just mentioned here now that even some people you review the applications get, you don't get.
Yeah.
Couldn't that just be luck?
That's opportunity meeting prepared. Like, it's not, I don't think there's anything like luck.
Your opportunity was there and you prepared too.
No, there's a lot of hard work, because some people will not even apply at all. Exactly, some people will not apply at all. So there's a lot of hard, do you know how long it takes to apply for an opportunity? So there's a lot of hard work. So there's no luck there. A lot of hard work goes by. And there's some people that actually work hard and don't get lucky. Let's say grace.
Okay.
Because guess what? There's some opportunities that I don't even apply for that they are recommended. Do you understand? So that's why I say you have to have been building credibility. Do you understand? You have to. There are people that even send me opportunities. Like, someone sent me something from government on the Netherlands like 2 days ago. A guy I don't know on LinkedIn. He said, oh, I hope you've seen this. I was like, oh, okay. Ah, let me go and apply. Do you understand? It's because I've been visible and he's seen me. So when people are thinking about opportunities, they just, if you're not visible. In fact, somebody gave me an opportunity 2 days ago because he saw that I posted on my WhatsApp. And he was like, oh, I think you'd be good for this opportunity. And everything. I just remembered now, this thing is happening tomorrow. Yes. And I just saw your WhatsApp. So imagine if I'd not post on WhatsApp. And they are paying. So do you understand? So my point is, you have to be visible. But guess what? It's also hard work that I've put in over the years. So if you're not putting in that work and you're winking in the dark, nobody's going to see you.
No one will see you.
Nobody's on a final note, we're about leaving right now. What's your advice for entrepreneurs, female and male? Everyone.
My advice to everyone is just keep going. This time last year, I literally thought I was going to die. Like, I was dying. I was like, in fact, I was so sick. Like, you know, they're pushing me on a wheelchair and all that. Like, you know, and in my head, I was thinking, if I die from yourself, maybe it's even better. You know, when you're having those thoughts like, oh, I'm tired. Like, I've been pushing. What's happening? You know, all my friends, they're buying houses. They're doing this. They're doing that. Me, I'm just here pushing this thing, you know, instead of me to, you know, take my money and do something else. You know, but you just have to keep pushing. And before you know it, something will just happen that will just make you know that you're actually on the right track, right? So I just tell people, don't give up. You know, people even tell me, if you're almost there. You know, you're almost there. I'm like, are you sure? Who am I? Please, you know, I'm tired. When will I continue? When will I stop? Where will we blow? You know, you're pushing. But, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, you know? And what keeps me going is even just listening to other people who have gone down, come back up, and, you know, letting them know that you cannot stay down. That's what the enemy wants. Yeah. You know, he wants you to be ashamed, wants you to stay down, wants you to feel like, oh, you're not good enough, you know, but you just have to keep pushing and not stand in the way of your own success. Get like your supporters, get your advisory board. Like, I don't do anything without my board. I disturb them. Please, I'm about to do this now. I'm about to hire somebody. Can you come and help me, you know, stay in this interview? Can you just make sure that, you know, you're getting good advice. People that actually love you and have your back, whether they've invested in you or not. You know, just people that can make you just feel good, you know, about yourself. Surround yourself with those people, because when those dark days come, you need them to be in your ears.
So I know that you had spoken about her economy transforming into a commercial bank. Where do you
microfinance
see
bank.
Microfinance. Where do you see you 5-10 years time?
Ah, I see me on my own.
I like, yeah, I like that deep breath you had to take. Like, if you see me next time, eh? All right, so go.
So, yes, I see us as a bank. I see us part of something huge. And I see us, you know, contributing to financial freedom for women across Africa. You know, giving access, women access to finance, giving them access to.
So, not just Nigeria, you're pushing.
Yeah, yes. Our goal is to, you know, go to other countries, Ghana, Senegal, countries that are similar, have similar issues, you know, to Nigeria. I see us really, really transforming lives there. And one of the ways we're doing is to actually get our own microfinance banking license, which we've applied for. And we are currently waiting for the central bank, you know, to give it to us. But anything can happen, you know, along the way. We're really hoping that, you know, we actually truly, truly transform the lives of these women. And in whichever form, you know, that happens, we're willing to, you know, take that.
Have you also taken steps to improve on your visibility in those other countries?
Oh yes. So we came second in a fintech competition with the Central Bank of Ghana.
Oh, wow.
So the Central Bank of Ghana, they know about the work that we're doing. Oh, wow. You know, we went for a program in Senegal as well. So, and that program was in partnership with the government of Senegal. So we're already trying to like build relationships in those countries so that when we're going, you know, it will be easy for us to, you know, build those partnerships and, you know, start there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we have a culture where you will tell us somebody you want to see on the Frankly Business Podcast and somebody who you really admire, you ask the person that a question. So when the person comes, would ask that person the question.
Who do I want to see? One of my investors, Dr. Alex Rune.
Okay.
I think he's such a smart man, like, and he's doing so much. He's currently the MD of Oado Energy, and he also owns Octera Capital, which is one of the companies that invested in her economy. I just want to know how he's handling everything. Like, he's building different entities that are so successful, and he's so young, so smart. So if you invite him here, I want to know how he's able to, you know, manage all of that and still remain, you know, very humble and accessible. Yeah.
Well, a lot to unfold, Doctor. Anyways, when you come, we're definitely going to ask you that question. It's been a great time having a conversation with you. I want to say thank you very much for coming. It's been a very, very insightful conversation. And that is how we draw the curtain to the end of this episode of the Frankly Business Podcast. Keep watching, keep liking, keep sharing, and we'll definitely keep you updated and keep you abreast as to what is really happening in the world of entrepreneurship in Africa and across the world. Precious, what do you have to say?
Keep learning, because I've learned a whole lot from Ife today. So keep learning. There's never an end to learning. And that's one thing I have learned today again. So keep learning and keep watching.
Cheers.
Thank you.